What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to the number one sports podcast in Southeast Metro Detroit. It's Teeing It Up with CNV, the second recording on this Monday afternoon with my fine co-host. Welcome back, Vladdy. Like we mentioned before, and we'll now mention again, a long break, our summer break. How are you?
Pretty good. The two or 3 weeks off, whatever it is at this point, was kind of maybe not needed, but dead period of sports. We've got personal trips planned. Obviously, you had your big exam. We'll get to that, but I'm doing pretty well. We had the Spartan Invitational this past weekend. I played incredibly poorly, some of the worst golf of my life, and it got slightly better at the end. Didn't really matter. Our opponents were red hot, so. As always, though, it was a great time seeing people we don't get to see as often, playing some golf and killing time. Other than that, not much has really changed. Honestly, it's still working, still on overtime, and still just living, I guess. I don't know. How are you? I feel like you've had more of the personal stories to tell.
Yeah, I guess not really the it's not really a story in itself, but the long summer of studying is finally over. Hopefully for good. I'll never have to study again. In reality, there's a 50-50 chance that I will be studying again come the new year, but we get there when we get there. Took the bar exam a week from tomorrow slash Wednesday. What an experience. The Breslin will never look the same. I think I've showed everybody the pictures at this point. Just an absolute clusterfuck. I've never really truly been in a room where it's just like there you could feel palpable excitement in a stadium. You can sometimes feel palpable nerves in a stadium, but that was just palpable stress and anxiety all in one room is how I kind of have described it. And you know, it's over with now. We got to play in the Spartan this past week. I myself also didn't play the greatest of golf, so I guess I won my two matches on Thursday and Friday, so there was that. But doesn't mean anything when you don't get to hold a trophy at the end of the weekend. So, but yeah, I'm good. We've got some baseball to talk about as we kind of approach the pennant races here and division rate playoff pushes for teams as the trade deadline ended. I believe that was last Thursday or Friday. And then we'll get into kind of starting to talk some general stuff in the football world. We'll get more and more in depth on previews and different stuff to talk about kind of as we get closer to the season. I believe your text said college football is about 3 weeks away now.
Yeah,
Week zero.
if you count week zero, it's 2 weeks away. I think the first games are August 23rd. If you count the thing when actual teams play and none of the stupid gimmicks where they go over to Ireland or whatever bullshit they're going to do this time, it's in 3 weeks.
So yeah, that's coming up quickly. In the midst of training camp, I don't know if we had any stories we wanted to talk about out of training camp. I don't know. At the end of the day, it is kind of just practice. But yeah, we'll get into kind of the baseball for the Tigers. They remain at the top of the AL Central kind of since we last talked. I believe it was just after the All-Star break when they had kind of limped in. They lost their last four to go into the All-Star break, and then they went on a stretch there where they lost 11 out of 12 games, and a lot of them were not even particularly competitive games. You saw the starting pitching take pretty much a step back from everybody, even Tarik Skubal mixing a bad start there. And then the offense, something that had been one of the better offenses in baseball, got cold, but as good teams do, and you looked at a team that was for sure the AL Central to got down to, I want to say, six or seven games at one point. It's back up to, I believe, 8.5 as we speak right now. And the Tigers are currently losing to the Twins as we are recording right now. The Tigers did get hot again. They won four in a row, then five out of six before playing kind of a big series this past weekend against a very good Phillies team in the NL. You looked at two primetime games against some good pitching matchups. Tarik Skubal on Saturday was your only win, of course. And then last night on primetime Sunday night baseball with I'm forgetting the lefty that the Phillies have that just absolutely dominated us in that two
Is
nothing
that
win.
Wheeler?
No, not Wheeler. It's he's a Hispanic, it's a Hispanic last name, like a Suarez or something like that. Big skinny lefty, throws an even like just as good as a changeup as Skubal. And he had us off balance. And that's kind of really my only comment is like we're now a little far enough away from the trade that slump. And we proved we got out of it to we're gonna battle back here and play better baseball down the stretch. But I guess my only comment on as far as play from this team right now is their lack of competitiveness against good teams and specifically good pitching. And you may ask yourself, well, there's a reason why good teams are good teams and good pitchers are good pitchers is they're going to put up numbers against everybody. And that's true. But the game last night and kind of some of these other starts you've seen Paul Skenes twice this year already. And some of the other stars in this league just really put together just absolutely dominating and uncompetitive performances by the Tigers. And again, while that doesn't worry me in on August 4th as we're recording, it does worry me in a 5-game series or a 7-game series when you get down there with some of these teams and what they have at the starting of their rotations, and that you cannot put together these performances. You have to find ways to scratch cross runs and produce runs. That's something the Tigers did really well on their historic stretch last August and September. It's something they've done really well through, you know, two quarters or two thirds to about three quarters of the season now. And it's something that they've lacked here, I think, in recent weeks. And I would like to see that improve. And it really worries me when push comes to shove for the playoffs, I guess. Trade deadline. I know you kind of have some comments on, as far as Detroit and what they do. I wasn't necessarily furious with what they did. I think a lot of people were hoping for, you know, Eugenio Suarez, or I mean, the way the Red Sox have played down the stretch here, there's no way Alex Bregman was for sale as the Red Sox kind of became buyers instead of sellers for the most part. And talk about sellers. I don't know if you saw Minnesota's traded, I think it was 10 guys at the deadline.
I
We talked
saw,
about, go ahead.
I was going to say, I saw as of right now, there are only two guys under contract for next season. Now, obviously, there's people who have to go to arbitration and sure you're going to field some guys in free agency. But as of right now, I saw there's two guys under contract for next season on the Twins.
And that's like a team that in the last couple of years has tried to spend a little bit of money. They gave the big contract to Correa 2 or 3 years ago now. They gave Paddock a lot of money only to trade him. Obviously, he's kind of put up some disappointing numbers. But talk about the A's and the Marlins and all these kind of uncompetitive franchises in baseball that are just there to collect their revenue sharing check. And Minnesota has had slightly more success than those franchises, so they don't necessarily get lumped into them, but they are very much a group of owners that are really not set on ever truly winning or being consistent winners. That's what that group. I mean, they're only in a division where only one team's above 500, basically. They're only like 6 or 7 games below 500 to where that was just seemed a little excessive for me. But anyways, back to the Tigers. The Tigers don't really make any big splashes. They do a lot of things that make their team better from the day prior, but it doesn't make that a playoff team into a World Series team. I'm not convinced. What I did like was some of the depth they've added in the rotation. Obviously, they get Charlie Morton, who's 41 years old, has had two All-Star seasons and has basically been a tale of two. They were showing his stats last night and Sunday Night Baseball. He made his first start for the Tigers. His first seven starts or like up until like May 31st, he had like an 8.5 ERA. And then since then he's had like a 3.5 ERA. So a guy that seems to have found it. I mean, he throws one of the better curveballs in baseball. It's still 93 to 96 at 41 years old. And you know, he was impressive in that start last night. 6 innings, only gave up the one earned run. You think if he can play like he has the last 6 weeks, he's somebody that can contribute and be that third or fourth starter come playoff time. And then they add Chris Paddock from Minnesota, like I just talked about. Another guy that's kind of got electric stuff, but has had numbers all over the place. ERA up to 5 this year. Really just a guy to pad the rotation to. You don't want guys like Montero throwing every fifth day or Tyler Melton or some of these random names they were throwing at the end of their staff with Reese Olson, now out for the season. And obviously, Job goes down earlier in the season. Flaherty's missed some time. So just a more firm everyday MLB player to kind of end out that rotation for the end of the season, which I like. And I will say, starting pitching, those were kind of two of the bigger names that went of any team for starting pitching. You saw a lot of big time relievers leave and find new homes, but not so much with starters. So that was what they did up front. In the back end, they acquire three guys. Another Montero from Atlanta. Wasn't really impressed with his stuff. Same with this Paul Sewell. Both guys that have a high 4 ERA, having mid seasons. And then Kyle Finnegan, who's kind of a hero Saturday night in the Skuball game. And he's a guy that he's a right around 4.3 this year, having kind of a down year, but has been an all-star the prior 2 seasons. And you're just kind of hoping if he can be that's another bolstering guy. And like I said, nothing sexy, but they are better today than they were the day before. I'm just not sure this made them anywhere near a World Series competitor at this point, in my opinion. That's kind of the Tigers in their current state right now as they stand.
Is this my cue to take over and continue my slightly intoxicated rant from like a week and a half ago? So to preface, I was on kind of a vacation a week and a half ago, and it was, I think, during the trade deadline stuff or right before, when you were kind of thinking rumors and were the Tigers really involved in any of them for kind of the big names, Duran from, I think, Minnesota, the closer. Eugenio Suarez, you had some other guys. Josh Naylor gets moved, and obviously the Tigers weren't there. As you described just now, they did make moves, and I think in a way you do describe it perfectly, where in a regular season 162 game series or 162 game season, it's great because you give yourself the depth. You lose Olson, you find a replacement for him, you find more arms for a bullpen that's been leaky at best at times, and you do help your team, but you don't really raise the ceiling. You raise the floor. And I think that's I kind of continue to that point where it's a very Detroit thing to talk about floors and prospects and next year and 25-year runways as if you're winning stuff in these years. And I kind of basically summarize it to where I thought I basically said that the city of Michigan, and all the way from the top to the bottom, from the fans to the guys who run the operations, your GMs, your presidents, whatever their titles are in each of their sports, to the owners, are really just losers. And they've kind of conditioned the fans to think that way of, oh, next year we'll get him, and oh, Kevin McGonigal will be here in 2028, so why should we try at all? Because no one said he has to be traded, just said, why don't you try when you still have Tarik Skubal, the best pitcher in baseball? You look at the Lions the last couple of years and some of these great teams that have been rolling in regular seasons. And obviously, last year's a little different with the injuries, but you don't do much. You kind of tread water by adding a Za'Darius Smith. You don't really raise your ceiling. You go back to 2023, which was maybe the more egregious year where you're fighting for a one seed and you have this glaring need at an edge rusher opposite Aiden Hutchinson, and there are good edge rushers available in Montez Sweat and Chase Young, and you were never really mentioned. You didn't really try. And that is where the people who are conditioned to think about next year start screaming, oh, we can't trade 18 first round picks for these guys. That's not fit. We need to have a future. It's like, nobody said you do have to trade 18 first round picks for these guys. They said you should make an effort to win a championship. This idea that prospects and guys that were drafted by Detroit are somehow the only ones that can win a title, I don't understand it. I can't believe I'm about to make this comparison, but if you look at the last 10 years in the city, the only team that ever really tried was the University of Michigan. They tried so hard they cheated multiple times. And guess what? They won something. And you'll never be able to take those memories away from those fans. And that's the thing that's unfortunate, because they did cheat and they got away with it, but they won. You look at the Pistons. I mean, I'll try and cut a pass here, because who's really available for some of these free agencies. That I talked about how the new CBA has really damaged how players can move, because now the bad teams are just not willing to take on contracts because they don't want to be in the luxury tax spending kind of levels. And so they've got underwhelming stuff. You look at, I mean, Michigan State basketball's underwhelming. Michigan State football's all, let's give the guy an 8-year runway and then he'll figure it out. And I know you've always been more critical of Smith, but I'm with you where if you don't see tangible progress, get out. There is no 9-year you can be the GM like Mr. Yzerman. Let's talk about that. How much longer does he get to do nothing before the fans wake up and say, wait a minute, when you started, I was in high school and now my kid's about to enter elementary school and you still haven't made the playoffs. So it's just, but people are okay with it. So why, I don't understand. I just think it's borderline pathetic from it, from all angles. I don't
Yeah,
think you
I kind of have two theories on that, on like the fans just being okay with it. I think one, I think they're somewhat hard on the fans, and that I think it's kind of just I don't think it's like Detroit is uncharacteristically like loser town compared to other mid-market cities. I just
okay.
think I think that's there's exceptions in certain sports and certain franchises, obviously, but I think overall it's somewhat of a representation of what mid-market professional sports are. And I would kind of consider where I do think you're right is I think, unfortunately, like I think Detroit's kind of on the upper end of that mid-market and is towards the, as far as performance level and loser town is, probably on the lower end of that average too. But and then my other theory is that unfortunately, like you're just conditioned. I think you mentioned this is like when you only know something for so long, there is no fight because you don't really know what to fight for. Like specifically with like a lot of these teams is if you're somebody our age that wasn't obsessed with sports as a kid, and you're a hockey fan, you don't know the Red Wings is what they were. The greatest franchise alive for didn't miss the playoffs for almost 30 years. You don't know the Pistons as the 04 champions, the bad boys in the late 80s and early 90s. With the Tigers, you don't remember that 2006 to 2014 stretch. With the Lions, I guess that's the exception because they've been good the last 2 or 3 years here, but before that, what was there to look at? Like even your dad didn't know anything different. So I'll cut the fan base specifically some slack for those reasons, but I do agree that it's just kind of pathetic that it's there's just no
there's no urgency.
there's
There's
no
no.
urgency for to change anything. Like no other world would just like being average be so okay. I guess there's a lot of average people out there, probably ourselves included. And but I don't know, even at the individual thing that you do on a day-to-day basis, being average is not considered good. You're going to get passed up in something you do. Somebody else is going to come in, a competitor is going to come in and take the business from you. Like, but that's not the case here. Like, it's just such an anomaly compared to like I think everyday capitalism. Not to get too like in the clouds, I guess, but it's very, very frustrating. I think a lot of what you said is correct. So,
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to just start rehashing it, but when is the last time we've seen a team in our town go, I don't even want to say all in, make a genuine push for a championship? And I'm not counting Za'Darius Smith after you lose Aiden Hutchinson and the rest of your team as a genuine push. Not sure I can count Patrick Kane as a genuine push coming off of his shoulder or whatever it was a year and a half ago when people didn't even know if he could still skate for 20 minutes a night or whatever he puts up. It's like, do you know? I don't particularly. Maybe when Dombrowski was still GM, and like you said, that 06 to 14 run where the actual owner, who was a true fan of the sport and not just a guy who viewed his franchise as an investment, was an owner, and he told him, do whatever you need to do, but I would like to see a championship before I died. Is that the last time we really tried?
Pretty much.
Yeah, and that to me is just unacceptable because yes, the teams have been bad and you can't be stupid because if you're stupid and you're bad, then you end up with Blake Griffin. And yes, I'm
Under
aware of that,
Drummond.
but when you've built a base, like of all of these teams at this point have built their base, why are you not moving forward? I don't understand this whole the idea of getting stuck in fifth gear. Don't you want to test out eighth gear once? See what's going to happen at 200 miles an hour. Have a little bit of fun, live a little.
Especially with the baseball thing, is there's such almost all those guys would be such temporary investments. Like, you don't even be paying the guy till the end of the season with a lot of those guys. So it's like, really? You can't pick up 6 million of his $17 million contract or whatever.
Yeah. I don't want to spend too much more
We don't
time on
want
this because
pizza prices to go up too high.
yeah, I don't want to spend too much more time just because it's kind of it's a negative topic and I've been told I'm a pessimistic negative fan, so maybe it's perfect and perfectly in my wheelhouse, but that's just something that as we talk about the Tigers and then them having a kind of a like you say a mediocre or a lack of ceiling raising deadline. And you couple it with kind of what I had said, what was it, 10, 15 days ago? I don't even remember anymore, but I think it fit perfectly. It's worth mentioning. And now we get to get into the fun stuff. The NFL is back. The Lions kicked off the season against the Chargers in the Hall of Fame game. We're not going to talk about that because I don't know if anyone watched it. I think that's a sicko move to watch the backups of the backups play football for 45 minutes, but what it does allow us to do is open up kind of the Pandora's box, if you will, of content and be able to talk football again. I think this is something we did last year, if not last year, the year before. I think we're going to go down our kind of top 10 of certain players at XYZ position in the league. I think on the defensive side, we'll probably just do top five. But yeah, I'm feeling excited. I know you have your camera off, but you can kind of see me start to smile, get a little more excited, a little bit of anxiousness here. So, do we want to go right into it?
Do you want to just like get defense out of the way, or do you want to go from with the big dogs at the top?
I'll let you choose.
Let's do big dogs to start.
I love it.
Start with the most important position in football, qu the quarterback position. I have 10 names in three different groups.
I think I might be exactly in your area where do we want to just start from the top? 'Cause I think the top is the easiest to do.
Yeah, I think you're crazy if you don't have a four. I have a four man group. I could
Yep.
argue for a fifth, but I won't. And to be honest, I have Josh Allen at the top because he was the MVP last year, but I think it's kind of any order of Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, and Joe Burrow. Is that what you got?
Yep, I've got Mahomes, Allen, just because I think for Mahomes, you make another Super Bowl. Yes, you're not the same gunslinger you were. You're more of a, I don't want to call it a Tom Brady, but it's more of a cerebral game now. Take what the defense gives you, don't force anything. He's gotten a little older, he's gotten wiser, he knows how to pick up defenses, understand coverages and kind of the decoys and whatnot. So I've got Mahomes at one still. I've got Allen at two, like you say. He played his best football of his career, ends in an MVP award. And I think most importantly, I remember saying this during the season, but he's finally realized kind of what I think Aaron Rodgers was so good at for the majority of his career was that I can just beat you on the next play. It doesn't have to be all gas every single snap. And he really limited the turnovers that in the past season, and it kind of gave the Bills maybe one of their best shots to win a Super Bowl in a while. They couldn't get it done, but I think they're kind of primed to do it again. And if this is the new Josh Allen, where he's not going to be harming his team with a minus one, minus two turnover kind of spread every single week, they're going to be around for a while.
Love it. My next group, I have two names,
I do as well.
and they are Jaden Daniels and Jalen Hurts.
So I'm slightly different, but I don't fully disagree with kind of where you're going to go with that. So you want to talk about that one first, then I can kind of just give my counter.
Yeah, I mean, Jalen Hurts, I think the hate and negativeness and why he shouldn't be there is kind of played out for me at this point. The guy wins. It's kind of on this last group. I went with also like kind of my 10th name was just somebody that I think is more of a winner than the guy left off the list. But I think for me, that's a big factor. I know he's got all the weapons. He's in a great situation, but the guy seems to find a way to win. And for Jaden Daniels, I think there's no reason why he can't be in that next cat in that first category by the end of this year, or maybe even the year after, with some of the stuff he did. And I left off a guy that after his rookie season last year was probably on in my list for this. So it could also go the other way. That's why he's not in that first group. But I think he's kind of a dog. He seems to like all the VR stuff and everything. He seems to be a guy that wants this. And is going to do what it takes to win. So I don't really see him falling off. And I just think he's got all the tools from being so mobile and from an arm standpoint to where he deserves to be kind of in this second tier of quarterbacks.
Yeah, so my second tier is Jalen Hurts and Matt Stafford.
Okay.
I'm completely with you in the Hurts thing. You can say he's bad all you want, and I've been maybe the conductor of that train of he's bad. But like you say, he's been to two Super Bowls. He's outplayed Patrick Mahomes in both of them. Obviously, won one, lost one. But this is a guy who does get it done. Yet does he have everything going in his favor? Is he in that kind of perfect system? Sure. But that's part of the sport, is to find guys who fit in the system that you want to run and use them to excel that to the best of their ability, with the tush push, with the way he can kind of get on the move, and with that addition of Saquon Barkley, they became lethal last year. So Hurts is there. Matt Stafford for me, this is honestly more of an indication, I think, of the state of quarterback overall, more so than Matt Stafford being at my personal number six spot. I just think that what he's done with a Rams team that is very, very young post Aaron Donald retirement, what he's done with these guys and Cooper Kupp kind of aged out of, I don't want to say competitiveness, but out of his top of the line performances from the early 2020s. You kind of finally got over that F them picks era, and you had to finally start restocking. And he led these guys. Him and Sean McVay have clicked brilliantly, kind of how Ben Johnson and Jared Goff did. And yeah, obviously he got his Super Bowl, and I can't deny that. So I've got Stafford at six, but again, I will preface that I think that's more of just the overall state of the quarterbacks in the NFL, more so than Matt Stafford and number six being kind of the pairing there.
Okay. I mean he I'll say that I guess I'll start with Matthew Stafford's in my last group of three guys. And the rest of that list is Jared Goff and Baker Mayfield. I think Baker he was 10th on my list. I just kind of think he's kind of reached that dog status and just kind of proven himself in a couple of different situations now. To where it's not just a fluke and he's just a guy that wants to win football games and is going to get it done now. And it'll be a little interesting to see what they do without, the perfect kind of like seemed like Liam Cohen had kind of a good situation going. And obviously Godwin was out for a good chunk of last year, but without Godwin for a full season now, you'll never know. But I mean I still think they're a good football team and he's only 30 years old, 29 years old, whatever he is now. And I think there's no reason why he can't pound off a couple of really nice seasons here in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, my last four is, I think, or we have the same top 10. We just differ on the placement. Jaden Daniels, my last four quarterbacks are CJ Stroud, Jaden Daniels, Jared Goff, and Baker Mayfield, kind of in that order. I give Stroud the nod over Daniels just because I've seen Stroud do it twice. Yes, he regressed last year with an awful offensive line and some injuries to his own receivers. But he still won another playoff game against everybody's favorite quarterback ever, Mr. What If, Mr. Hypothetical. I'm not even going to say his name because he doesn't deserve it. But
Now I realize I only said nine names, and I was my the name I have as honorable mention is that guy. So
oh.
I'm not a big Stroud guy. I don't know what it is. I don't know.
Where was
You
your
go
guy
off on
against
why it
C
should be.
Where was your guy against Stroud in the playoffs? He was panning the ball out like cotton candy.
I know, and It does seem like Stroud, another guy that's gamer, but like I am somewhat of a, I guess, media hoe when it comes to just like buying in on the hype on him. And everything on paper and all the highlights look great. He just unfortunately plays for one of the most loser franchises ever, I think personally too. But going on, who were we talking about before? Sorry, CJ Stroud.
Yeah, that was just I give him the nod over Daniels just because I've seen him do it twice, and that's I've always maintained that that's an important criteria to me. But you are correct. Daniels, 1 year after we said, "Oh my God, CJ Stroud had the best rookie season as a quarterback ever," went and one-upped him, and he had the best rookie season we've seen as a quarterback ever, taking the Commanders team into the NFC Championship. I almost was about to say the Eastern Conference Championship, but God, look at how rusty we are after taking a couple weeks breaks. But Daniels taking the Commanders to that NFC title game. Since then, the Commanders have done maybe what I would have wished some of our teams would do. They trade for Deebo Samuel. They trade for Laremy Tunsil. They kind of give him all of the weapons he's going to need. Now, granted, as he gains one weapon, he loses another with Terry McLaurin currently in a contract holdout with the team. I'm going to assume that that ends up getting resolved, because I think that would be incredibly ridiculous of them to not pay him. But that's for a later topic. We're talking about players here. Daniels, if I see him do it again, he can absolutely jump into the Hurts Stafford. And you know what? If again means a Super Bowl, maybe he jumps into tier one. But for me, he's going to stay behind Stroud just because, again, I want to see him do it a second time. I want to see what happens, how he adjusts to defenses having tape on him and his tendencies. And then Goff Baker, yeah, I think those are pretty straightforward, like you say. Goff has kind of formed that or had that perfect relationship with Ben Johnson, ran an incredibly efficient offense for 2.5 seasons. And Baker is the dog, the gamer, the guy you see in the video just stiff arming Nick Bosa for 10 yards and then releasing a dot 15 yards down the field. He's him. And like you say, I think you said it perfectly. He's done it with multiple situations now. 2 years ago was Dave Canales, last year was Liam Cohen, and now he gets another new offensive coordinator. And if he does it again, you're looking at a certified quarterback.
To the running backs.
Yes, sir.
I had a hard time with like after six. Kind of had like I don't know. I looked at like seven or eight names for that those last four spots that like, depending on what you were judging off of, I think you could have convinced me belong in those spots. So I guess I'll start with the six that I had no problem naming, and that's, I think, far and away number one right now is Saquon Barkley after the season he had.
Yep.
And then I think it's kind of a tier of McCaffrey, assuming healthy, Derrick Henry after the season he had after people kind of thought he was done, Jahmyr Gibbs, Bijan, and what he's kind of become, and then Jonathan Taylor. Those were kind of the six I had at the top.
So,
Go ahead,
oh, I
sorry.
was just going to say, I've got five of those six. I don't have JT as high as you. I think maybe he's kind of.
He was sixth on that, but
He'd be a little lower on my list, but yeah, I think those first three are pretty, or the first five are kind of unanimous at this point.
because like I said, I kind of had a hard time with like, I was a little biased because I liked what Mixon did for me in fantasy, and then I have Josh Jacobs, Breece Hall, and then Alvin Kamara sneakily kind of still fits into that list for me, but there were a bunch of names I had a hard time keeping off.
Yeah, it is kind of a. It's a deep position after year or after about 3 or 4 years of us saying that the position's dead. So that part's fun. Good to see, like you say, some gamers, some studs back down there. I had after kind of that first five tier, I had Josh Jacobs at six just because I was uber impressed with what he did going to the Packers, kind of going into a new team and borderline shouldering the load for that offense when Jordan Love gets hurt at the very beginning of the season, never really looks right after that. And I think that kind of altered how the Packers wanted to run their offense. I think they made it a lot more ground heavy than they maybe would have had Jordan Love stayed healthy the entire season. And Jacobs just kept running along. Yeah, he had some help, Emmanuel Wilson. I think there was another guy that would run pretty efficiently when Jacobs needed a break, but you gave him volume, he gave you efficiency, and he was awesome.
Goes heavily under the radar too, I think,
Yep,
personally.
I agree. I think for me, I've got Kamara after Jacobs at seven. I think that similarly to him, it's one of those where Kamara gets it done more so through the air than on the ground, but he's just kind of a unique pass catching weapon out of the backfield. And for a team like the New Orleans Saints, which for lack of a better term, have been pretty hopeless the last couple of years, he has been a spark on that offense. So I took him there. I had JT at eight. Maybe I'm kind of factoring in those two injury riddled seasons before last year and still kind of being hesitant on him, but he's an incredible running back, kind of can do it both ways, and another one of those guys where you can give him 25 touches a game and he should be able to reward you very handsomely.
Was that 10?
I think for me, I'm just missing Breece Hall, and then I think there might be one more where I kind of had a couple of guys fighting for it, and part of I can't put Ashton Jeanty here because he's never taken a snap on a Sunday, but part of
Also,
me.
like I had like the like Achane. I wanted to put him in for fantasy purposes off of some of those games he had last year, but I was like, no, like you can't, like can't actually do that, like. Because that's how that's, to be honest, for the offense, that's how I looked at fantasy points first, and then I went off of how I vibe, how those guys vibe for me. And Achane had, what, the 250-point games?
Yeah, his name's Achan, by the way.
Is it Achane? I always say, no one's ever corrected me saying Achane, so.
It's weird because when he came into the league, everyone called him Achane, and then I think after he like broke out for the first couple times, like they sat him down. He's like, "Yeah, I like being," or he's like, "My name is Achan. It's not Achane." He's interesting because like, I used to call him Achane until I saw until I saw him kind of
So
talking about it.
Achane. I'm just gonna say it 100 times after this
Till you
podcast.
remember it, yeah.
On the receivers, again, I think a category where, I mean, I put Amon-Ra kind of up there, but I think the top four are pretty consensus for me. And then you look at it, I had trouble of like I kind of forgot Davante Adams still exists after the season he had, and going to the Jets, and then obviously I've Godwin in there towards the bottom too, and that's dependent on if he ever plays a down to football again, obviously. But my top, I guess I'll go with my consensus top four was Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, CeeDee Lamb, and AJ Brown.
Ooh. I think this for me is kind of be something similar where like just slight disagreement. I think JJ and Chase are in their own tier. Obviously,
Yeah, I could agree with that.
I
Yeah.
think CeeDee Lamb is in tier two. I think tier three for me starts with Amon-Ra and ends with AJ Brown.
I had Amon-Ra 5, so you
Yeah,
was a bit
again,
closer there.
we're splitting hairs. It's just that's how it is for me where I think at this point, I think what Amon-Ra does to separate himself is incredible. The availability, I think the willingness to block. He hasn't exhibited diva tendencies yet, which maybe this is unfair to talk about players as opposed to the personalities, but
Yeah.
I value that compared to AJ Brown, who's threatening to hold out and reading meditation books on the sideline or whatever he was
Yeah,
doing last
AJ
year.
Brown is just the freak. If
He
you could
is.
build a wide receiver in a lab, you would build it like him.
He is.
That's what gives it to me for him. But
I think six is where it starts to get interesting. Where do you go?
I have Godwin on that list. I think he sneakily doesn't get talked about on a list like this enough. And again, it's dependent on him playing more downs of football. And then I have Garrett Wilson after that, Davante Adams, and then Puka ends my list. So, that's where I'm at. It kind of similar to running backs, though. I had like another three names I looked at putting in those last like two or three spots.
Interesting. So I think this is where we're going to disagree the most, and it's not even that much. I have Puka at six. I think after he did it again, if you will, he kind of proved himself as that guy who can win at all three levels. He's a willing run blocker. He's kind of that perfect Cooper Kupp replacement in that scheme that Sean McVay runs and in those tight formations that Sean McVay loves to run with that offense. I think he's found himself a perfect situation if his knees can hold up and I know he's got the, he said publicly, oh, I want to retire before 30 or whatever, I think, or at 30. I think he's got all the room in the world to kind of solidify himself as one of those top receivers. After that, I actually have Nico Collins' teammate, Mike Evans.
Okay. Oh, okay. I
Mr.
actually didn't even think of
Thousand-yard
him that
receiver
got it.
himself.
I mean, it's crazy that I didn't really think about him with the, what is it now, 7,000-yard seasons.
What I mean, hasn't he been over 1,000 every year of his career or whatever? Or,
Yeah.
yeah, I don't, I mean, maybe it's seven, maybe it's, hell, it could be 9 or 10 at this point. He's
Yeah.
been in the league for a while, but yeah, I just value that longevity. I value that kind of consistent ability where it's no longer, oh, you know, you got us once like Juju Smith-Schuster just because AJ Br or Antonio Brown was opposite. You know Mike Evans is there on the field. You know the ball's coming to him, but you can't stop it. He's incredible. So he makes it on my list. After that, I've got Nico Collins.
Okay.
And then I have two guys that are on my outside looking in just because I need to see them do it again, and that's Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers. I thought they were, I think Brian Thomas was borderline like a revolution down in Jacksonville, playing with Mac Jones for half a season and looking like a stud and making Mac look serviceable as a quarterback. I thought that was immensely impressive. Malik Nabers, obviously, in New York, being the only person of note and still putting up the season he did, kind of battling that weird toe injury at all times. But I think those are guys where if I see them do it a second year in a row, they'll jump my last two names, which are Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams.
Yeah, I didn't know what to do with Tyreek Hill. Obviously, it seems like that's a big miss on mine. I was somebody that drafted him first overall in a fantasy league and was very infuriated by his performance, and I think that that definitely carried a little too much weight in my decision to leave him off the list. But clearly, you have him towards the end of the tens, the top 10
Yep.
spot, so it's not too far off. And I mean, he is. Obviously, I don't really like. Did they like try to trade him after he like said at the end of the year, I'm out, and then it
I
was
don't
like.
think so. I think it was more of just like a, hey man, like let's grow up a little bit.
And then
And
he's kind of like bad mouthing McDaniel. Like,
oh yeah,
have.
ab oh, absolutely. I don't think he has taken the whole let's grow up a little bit part of let's grow up a little bit, but I think you, it's, I think the production he still puts up on the field is still unfortunately worth it in the Dolphins'
Yeah.
eyes, where I'm sure they'd love to move on from him and get some picks back and build some of that depth on their team because they seem to not have any of that at any
No.
positions and have Jalen Waddle kind of run their wide receiver one, but I just don't think they can.
No, I agree.
To tight end.
To the tight ends. I got a little lazy with this and kind of just named like the top 10 tight ends without a true order. I do think Brock Bowers, I mean, obviously he has to do the thing we've kept so talking about and then do it again. But I'd argue with that rookie season at this current moment, he kind of stands in his own category. And then because you look at that next group of really good guys, and it's kind of that older group that's been there for a while that is still probably towards the top, but isn't quite what they used to be anymore. And I mean, Kittle still produces at a high rate, Mark Andrews at a high rate. Travis Kelce had, you know, kind of a down year, but is still. Unfortunately, you can never count him out on a list like this. And then you get some. Then I went to like, so I had that group, and then I had kind of the younger group of McBride, Kincaid, Kyle Pitts, and that guys that I think have proven it, but like haven't reached that elite status yet. And while they might be better current football players in that older group, I just. Couldn't get myself to top, get those guys to top it. So that's kind of where my list went.
I think there's two things for me that are glaring omissions, or maybe things that I'm really gonna fight you about. And this, once again, from your position of Tyreek Hill in number one pick range, is a guy who's owned Kyle Pitts for the last 3 years in Dynasty Football. That dude should not be anywhere near a top 10 list. He shouldn't be near a top 20 list. He shouldn't be near a top 30 list. He is a glorified bum who hates playing children's games for generational wealth. I hate that man.
They might. Hey, you never know. Michael Penix says they're going to get him the ball more.
you know what? Screw it. Just so they can really make my year. I hope they do get him the ball, just because it would be the perfect kind of Vladdy Jinx curse of guy puts up 1,000 yards as a rookie with what was left of Matt Ryan's dead body, or Joe Flacco. I think it was Matt Ryan's dead body. Then he gets traded to Vladdy's dynasty team, and then he proceeds to not put up 1,000 yards in those 3 seasons combined, only to then turn around and put up another respectable season. I think that would be beautiful. As you guys can tell, no bias here. N none from me.
No,
I'm
no.
purely objective on this one.
Yeah.
But I agree with the other thing. The Brock Bowers is kind of that exception, as there are exceptions to every rule. That rookie season was ridiculous. He was the only person of note on an entire team, and he did everything that he was supposed to do. He did everything he did when he was lined up in Georgia. He was taking snaps out of the backfield, inside, outside, yards after catch, blocking. He's incredible. I mean, he probably is the best tight end in football. I think George Kittle is quietly, depending on where you have him, underrated. I think he had a mammoth season, and going into this year where Brandon Ayuk is not starting the season on the field, Debo Samuel is gone, Juwan Jennings and Ricky Pearsall are interesting but unproven, I think
Right.
George Kittle is set up for a monster year.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with the rest of it. Then you get into your Kelce's, who even in a down year are still better than most tight ends, because those are the standards they've set for themselves, and even as they age, they're still that good. You've got your Andrews's, who got better as the year went on after that kind of crazy. I think it was it some kind of Lisfranc surgery that Andrews had in the offseason last year that kind of impacted his ability to start the year, and everyone just thought he was dead.
I don't remember.
It was
Maybe I just.
some weird stuff that like just isn't easy to, it's not like, oh, I got turf toe and 2 weeks later it feels fine. It was one of those things you have to really gradually come back with. And I think, like you said, as the year went on, he became serviceable. He became Mark Andrews again. You've got Hockenson. The last one I kind of disagree with, and I think just because I've seen him now do it 2 years in a row, is Trey McBride. I think he is perfect for Kyler Murray, because Kyler Murray hates throwing in the middle of the field, probably because he can't see over the offensive line. So he likes scrambling and then just finding a guy who can get open. And Trey McBride is kind of perfect at that kind of scramble drill that Travis Kelce was perfect at for all those years with Mahomes.
Right.
And he kind of just eats with Kyler. So I would have McBride higher than you, but I think with the rest of them, I can't really disagree. And if I have to drop Pitts, give me Tucker Kraft inside. I think he's kind of a George Kittle light, where he loves to block, he loves the yards after catch. He's, for lack of a better term, crafty with his route running. So that's who I would put in those kind of top tens at the fringe parts of it, over
Did you
Kyle.
not have Laporta on your list anywhere?
He probably falls in the he pro for me, he probably falls in the Tucker Kraft range. I for kind of forget how many names I've said at this point. If I'm below 10, I think Laporta maybe comes next, and there may be a David Njoku.
Evan Ingram, sneaky, had a good last two seasons.
He did. I.
Sneaky, like
Yeah,
kind of like.
they were sneaky in weird situations where they didn't really amount to anything, because the teams he
Sure.
played, or the team he played for, was led by a bum. But
Right.
I think with, for me, the age part of Evan Ingram's game and going to a new team and having to reestablish himself, I can't give that.
No, I don't disagree with that. I was just curious with the
Yep.
Laporta
No, I
thing.
agree. Like I
I
said,
struggle.
I think I might have mislabeled how many names I really had on
No,
my
because
list.
like I originally had him at six, and then I had him off the list, and then I didn't say all 10 of my names out loud there, but he was not, it ended up not being on it. So I was just curious.
Fair.
The defense.
We're going edge rushers to start.
Yeah, sure.
I think this is actually a kind of a pretty standard top five, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I think the order might be able to change, but for me, it's Myles Garrett, T.J. Watt, Trey Hendrickson, Micah Parsons, and then Aiden Hutchinson.
So I didn't have Aiden Hutchinson. I had Max Crosby instead, but
Did I not say Max Crosby?
I don't think so.
Watt, Garrett, Parsons. No, you're right. I did not. Yeah, I guess I kind of completely blanked on Crosby there. I think Now that you talk about it, given the fact that Hutch didn't actually get to complete his defensive player of the year caliber season off the first couple weeks, I can't keep him there. So yeah, let me drop Aiden Hutchinson and add Max Crosby to that list. But Hutch, Trayvon Walker, those guys are kind of just banging on the door waiting for these old guys to finally stop being as good as they are.
The one thing I'll say on this while we're on this category, Micah Parsons demanding a trade. What are they going to get for him? Or is this just going to be stubborn Jerry being stubborn Jerry? Because I also think it's going to end up happening.
I think if you look at Micah Parsons and the trade of it all, I think the very first thing you can look at is Khalil Mack when he got traded to the Bears. What was it, almost a decade ago now, which is crazy to think about. But he was pretty much, I think, two first round picks, a second round pick, a third round. I forget the exact kind of numbers to it, but if Micah Parsons were to get moved, I think you're looking at something similar, multiple firsts. Some mid rounders as well. Maybe you get back some mid rounder of your own alongside him just to make sure you still have the ability to field teams for reasonably cheap prices as you kind of still can draft rookies. But I think it absolutely starts with two firsts, if not three firsts, because I think he's a little younger than Khalil Mack was when he got traded. And the other thing, and I had this conversation on the car ride back from the Spartan with our resident Boston friend. While it wouldn't be smart for the Cowboys to pay him because they have so much money tied up in Dak and CeeDee Lamb and him now, I mean, you'd be looking at, I think, almost 40% of your salary cap in three players if you did that. That's kind of how the Toronto Maple Leafs were built, and we know how well that was for team building purposes.
Yeah. You're actually anti, they shouldn't sign him.
I mean, I don't think they should, but I think you have to. Like, you can't let Micah Parsons go.
I agree. That's my thing, is I just think he's too good to ever let go.
Yeah, no, I think they absolutely should be signing. I'm just saying is from a position of, like you say, stubborn Jerry, if he would have paid CeeDee Lamb 2 years ago, and if he would have paid Dak Prescott a year before he did, I think he saves enough money. And I've kind of, one of the things that I know as I've gotten older, the last couple of years I've completely flipped on was I used to be, oh, make the players prove they deserve it. I am completely of the opinion now, if you have a guy who's shown you, let's say, what CeeDee Lamb did in his first 3 years, you make him sign that contract, you give in to those demands as early as possible because it's only going to look like a better deal as the years go by. I mean, we look at Amon-Ra St. Brown last year getting his, well, I think it was 33 or 35 million a year, and everyone's like, oh, the Lions are screwed. And now I don't think Amon-Ra's even in the top five or borderline top 10 paid receivers in football anymore. And
Right.
it changes that quickly. And the prime example is Patrick Mahomes. What was it, 5, 6 years ago? He got his $450 million contract, and everyone says, "Oh, the Kansas City Chiefs will never win again because he's getting paid $45 million a year for all those years." And then you blink and look up, and Dak Prescott is making 60, and you're like, "What the fuck happened here?"
Yeah.
So that's kind of a philosophical outreach as we talk about defensive ends, but that's just something that I've kind of come around to.
No, I kind of agree with everything you said there. To the interior, to tack, D tackle.
Yep.
I mean, I don't think this has as quite as consensus as edge rushers. I have Chris Jones as my number one, but I think
Yep.
you could make the argument for Dexter Lawrence as well.
He's my number two.
And then I have on that list Jeffrey Simmons, and then Jalen Carter, and fifth, I have Quinnen Williams still, even though
Yeah,
he
I've
didn't.
got Quinnen Williams at three because I think he gives you a little bit of best of both worlds. I actually have Jalen Carter at four, and then maybe a kind of surprise because he's more of a, I don't want to say one trick pony, but I think Vita Vea is my fifth best defensive tackle just because he is game breaking, is a run stopping defensive tackle.
Yeah. Yes.
Kind of a shame about Aleem McNeil. I think he could have been on pace to maybe be on the fringes of this list had he not gone and torn his ACL.
Yeah. What's it like? What's his stat? I don't even know what his status is.
I don't think we
He's
see him
done.
before Thanksgiving, to be honest. So yeah, we're in for a real treat with this defensive line. Let's go Tyleek Williams. Come on, man. What do we got next?
Linebackers.
Yes, sir.
I have Fred Warner, Roquan Smith. Then I kind of had a hard time because then I the list I was looking at had off ball and on ball, so I wanted to include some guys from both. And I have Jack Campbell. No, I'm kidding. That was a joke.
You kind of got me there, I'm gonna be honest with you.
I thought I could. And then Zach Bond and Nick Bolton.
Like the Zach Bond pull. I think I don't want to say he came from nowhere, but kind of like Saquon Barkley, he found himself a situation on that Philadelphia Eagles defense that is perfect for him, and he just rolled. I mean, he was averaging almost 10 tackles a game, which is just nasty. So I like the Zach Bond. I like the Nick Bolton, but I actually will go a little farther down, or farther up, a little farther out. I think Tremaine Edmonds is maybe one of those guys that doesn't get talked about because he's not Fred Warner or Roquan Smith, but he was a guy that got, I think the Bears signed him, if I remember correctly, from Buffalo for kind of quote unquote big money in free agency. But I think he's one of those few players that at least at the beginning of the contract has actually lived up to it. He's not a guy where you're sitting there saying, did we really give almost $20 million a year to this? Especially in the Bears case after letting a Roquan Smith go because you didn't want to pay him his numbers. And I think for me, the last thing that maybe I would say is, I can't believe I'm about to do this, and maybe I'm just going a little bit too much on the fact that this team as a whole just went far in the playoffs, but give me old man Bobby Wagner with the
Wow.
Commanders.
Wow. He deserves it.
I said, I mean, he is a guy that, yes, he's not Bobby Wagner from 8, 10 years ago, but he's a guy who's incredibly smart, who made up for all of the physical limitations or the declining of his physical abilities, and he makes up with it by being in the right place at the right time. He's incredibly good at reading the defense, knowing what to do, what to call, how to be your leader on the defensive side.
Safeties.
Would you like to start?
I think Kyle Hamilton's kind of number one right now.
Okay.
And then I went a little biased. I have two Lions on this list. I have Brian Branch, if you want to call him a safety. And then Xavier McKinney, Kirby Joseph, and then Derwin James.
I would probably agree with that list from top to bottom. I might drop Kirby Joseph a little bit, and I like Antoine Winfield. For me, I think the ball skills there are incredible. But I don't think you can deny Kirby Joseph is in the conversation.
Ball hawk.
Yep.
What else are we missing?
I think we're
Cornerback.
missing corners. I think corners is kind of one of the easier ones, but I think there's a potential for us to disagree here based on how we're viewing some of these guys. So do we want to start with maybe the unanimous one, Patrick Surtain at one?
Yeah.
Just because it's your defensive player of the year. Just he's such a pure corner. He's got some physical skills as well. Where do we go after that? Because I think this is where it really does open up.
Yeah, I had Derek Stingley Jr. at number two.
I had and I can't believe not I was gonna say not can't believe, but I've got Trent McDuffie.
Yeah, I had him later on. He's on my
I think
list
for
too.
me, he kind of showed why the Kansas City Chiefs were okay with letting L'Jarius Sneed go.
Yeah.
And he stepped into that cornerback one role and made it his own. Kind of like Surtain and Stingley for me is three. I think these are all guys that are young, and I'm kind of glad we're on the same page because I thought maybe one of us might go the Jalen Ramsey route, especially high on the list. And I just don't think that's that he's
I don't
that
have him
talented.
on my list, I'll be honest.
We're on the same page then. I thought we might be disagreeing here, but yeah, I think Jalen Ramsey's not the guy he was with the Rams, and he's certainly not the guy he was with the Jacksonville Jaguars all those
Jaguars,
years
yeah.
ago.
I have Denzel Ward next, and then I have kind of what I think is a controversial one to clear out my list, because he had a very down year, but I still believe in his pure talent being towards the top of this list. And that's Sauce Gardner.
Yeah, I've got Christian Gonzalez at four.
Yeah, I mean, he would probably be six for me.
You talk about kind of guys who not only had a down year, but a guy who's missed some time with injury, a guy who I'm not going to say overlooked, but a guy who, because he played for a bad football team without Bill Belichick, without Tom Brady, that no longer dominates the NFL kind of headlights and headlines,
Headlights.
if you will. People might not know about him to the extent that maybe he deserves it. I love Christian Gonzalez as just this fluid corner. And then I'm with you there. Sauce Gardner, after a down year, quote unquote, would slide a little bit, but is still probably a top five corner, and he is number five for me.
Love it. All right, kicker. No, I'm kidding.
Not Justin Tucker. It starts and ends with Brandon Aubrey.
Yeah, it does. But I'll let me throw you another guy out there. Batesy.
Oh, Lord. All right. Well, are we all set? There are no more positions, right?
Unless you want to do like coaches.
Not particularly.
Good, because there's only one answer. Dan the man Campbell.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah, if you made it this far, thank you. It's great to talk about football again. I think in the weeks leading up, we might do more team specific stuff. I know in the NFL we've done that in the past. I know college we typically do a conference by conference team before giving our own teams, maybe usually their dedicated stuff with Michigan State and the Lions. We'll see how all those kind of weeks align and how we can make it all work. But it's just good to talk about football again. We don't have to get creative with stupid or silly topics, or we go outside the box and come up with magical ways to debate ourselves to kill time. I think this little break we took was well needed, almost, to kind of get out of that rut, and I'm very excited to go forward.
Yeah. It's we're getting there, folks. So hang on, be in there. This is the number one sports podcast in Southeast Metro Detroit for a reason. Thanks for listening.
Go Tigers.